Well, I'm going to give you a little challenge to read this before you go to bed. There's only 86 verses in it. And some of you just had the strangest looks on your face. There's only four chapters. It's 86 verses. It's very easy, easy read. The story is phenomenal. It's a love story. It's a love story about a man and a woman, but it's also a love story about God and mankind. And it is a picture of our country at this time. The background of this is set just like what we're seeing right now in our country. And I think the Lord wants to use it to help us all. So if you will follow me, we'll start out at verse 1. But before we start at verse 1, you notice that the book of Judges is what is in the Bible before the book of Ruth. What I'd like you to do is look at the last chapter of Judges. It's the 21st chapter. It's the next page over, more than likely. In my Bible, it's right on the same page as Ruth starts. Go down in chapter 21 to the very last verse, verse 25. And let's read that out loud together. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in their own eyes. That's the background. When people do everything that's right in their own eyes, it's called relativism. Everything is relative. Relativism comes out of humanism. Humanism has been taught in our national education system for 20 to 25 years. And as Chairman Mao said before he died, he had one time said when he took over China and turned it into communism, that all we need, let the older people just die off and let the schools, let everything go away, just give us the children that are 5 years or younger, and for 25 years we will make them communists. That was his feeling. That's relativism. Everything's relative. In our country, relativism is this. I will do what I want to do, but don't you bug me. When you want to do what you want to do, then you go ahead and do it, and I won't bug you. You march in the streets for what you want to march in the streets, and I won't ever stop you. You put it on the ballot to vote for whatever you want, and I'll go with you. And we'll vote for that, and we'll change things. Well, relativism is that we all do what we want, what's right in our own sight. The elections all over our country somewhat shocked everybody because they're finding out that 100, it's either Florida or Ohio, 140% of the people voted. And in Philadelphia, 99% of the people voted for, no, it's 100% voted for one candidate. That's an impossibility. And they're finding out all over the country that there was fraud. And it's not going to be very nice when it all comes to a head, if it does. But relativism and humanism is basically without God, humanism. It's about man. It's not about God. So the background is the country has turned from God. And there's a lot of good stories in Judges. But what about Ruth? Okay, a friend of mine, a general retired in Israel, last night sent me a unclassified document with photographs and bar charts of the 75,000 troops that are on the ground right now. And they have surgically responded, the Israelis have responded surgically to all the 750 missiles that have been fired at them in the last few days. And surgically means they know where everybody is and where their ammo is, and they just go and take that out, and they don't take anything else out. And we look at that and we say, when are they going to turn to God? They're the most powerful military force in the Mideast, of course, but they need God desperately. There are over 200 brothels in the town of Tel Aviv alone. The city in the beaches of Tel Aviv, Israel, is the number one vacation spot for homosexuals in the Middle East, in Europe. Israel is so far from God, but yet we know where it is today is where it's prophesied it'll be when the Lord comes back and takes his church off. And then great tribulation will come. Well, in these things that I saw last night, there was a satellite view looking down, right down to the very street in the area where there was a missile launcher. And everything around it was written, a supply house, store, library, so that when the pilots or whoever go in, they are computerized to only go to one spot and not get any damage. I thought, my goodness, God looks down the earth every morning. His eyes are going to and fro throughout the earth to see if there's any faith. I look at you people, and you're an oddity to the statistics that you do have faith. You're a minority, getting even more so. But God honors people of faith. He always has. And when you trust in the Lord with all of your heart, there isn't anything God won't do for you and can't do for you. But when you're trusting, the door is open for Him to come in and help you. Now, I call this connecting the dots. And the reason I challenge you to read where I leave off is that you will begin connecting even more dots. Because many times I have found in many years of counseling that if you can sit and listen to people for a while, it isn't in the first couple minutes that they say, here's the problem. Sometimes you have to work a little bit, and then the problem comes out. The bad thing about being a counselor is you could be there for 35, 45 minutes, and they just, blah, 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 and you let them keep talking, and then all of a sudden they say, but, and at the word but, you erase everything they said for the last 45 minutes, and now you start listening, and they start sharing their heart. Well, when you connect the dots in your life, pain can go away, because understanding comes. And if you could have only seen the big picture, you might not have responded the way you did at the beginning. Or you might not be as angry as you are at this moment, at God or at somebody else. So we're going to look at a family, and this family is going to speak to us. In those days, there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. And now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. No king. The judicial system made the rules. We have had in the last 8 years or so many rules that have been set down by the courts but have never, ever been voted on by the people. That's the area that they were living in at that time. There was no leadership standing up and saying, go left, go right, go here, go there. And it was so disturbing that the people turned from God, and now they had no military, and their finances are collapsing, and the jobs are down. And it says the judges ruled that there was a famine. And in this land, this famine, lived a family, a certain man. I'd like you to underline a certain man. There is a study that you could do, starting in the book of Genesis and going to the end. And this term, a certain man, pops up several times. And the man is never named. But a certain man shows up to help people and to guide people. Like you've had a flat tire and a certain man pulls over and he just happens to have a jack in the same car and you don't have a spare. And this certain man gave you a spare in his wheel and said, don't worry about it, I'll just take your wheel, I'll get a new tire. And he drives off. A certain man. Sometimes people come into your lives and you don't know who they really are, but you like them and they're kind. And it's a certain person that God has sent. Joseph, 17 years old, smart as a whip. His father loved him so much, even more so than the other brothers. And that made them jealous and angry. And one day he asked his son to go out in the field and tell him how his brothers are doing and how are the sheep. He had a lot of wealth from sheep. And so it says that Joseph went out in the field and he had a coat of many colors. And most literally in the original language, it's wrists and ankles, that it was a full-length coat. And only a prince would wear that. And it had many colors. It was beautiful. It was expensive. But it's definitely not what you'd wear out in the field with a bunch of dirty sheep. So he goes out there, and he's probably a little bit arrogant. The dad likes me better. And he goes out there, and they see him coming, and they make a plan to kill him. You know the story. They grab him, and Reuben stands up and says, don't, this will break dad's heart. Don't kill him, whatever you do. Look, there's a well. There's something over here. Let's put him in that well. And the scriptures say, and his brothers lowered him into the pit. You know the story, Ishmaelites, Midianite traders, and their camels came by a couple days later, and they said, let's sell him as a slave. And so they took off his fancy coat that Dad gave him. They ripped it. They cut a sheep, and they put blood over it. They sold the brother. He went off to Egypt, and they went back and said, Dad, some lion jumped on Joseph, and he's dead. We found his coat, and he was eaten completely. Breaks the father's heart for many, many years. Well, what was interesting about that is they always took the sheep to Shechem. Now, maybe you are a routine person. You do the same thing every day, every week. Or go to church. You sit in the same place every Sunday. I find that in our church, no matter where anybody's sitting, they can't fool me. It's their seat. And I look around, yeah, okay, they're all there. But when they switch a seat, I know somebody's playing a joke on me. But he was in routine. He went out to Shechem, and he was wandering. The word wandering literally meant as one intoxicated, but he wasn't intoxicated. Now, I don't know if heat was getting to him, but he was staggering around a little bit. And a certain man said, what is it you're looking for? He said, my father's sheep, my brothers. He said, oh, they went to Dothan. So this guy knew who this family was, and he knew what the business was, and he knew where they all were. Could have been an angel. Could have been the Lord. Could have just been a certain man that had been praying for that family. Have you ever thought that you may be the only person praying for the person that you're praying for? Or persons? There may be one other person on the planet, and you have a burden for the neighbor next door or the person at the gas station. This certain person gave him direction. It's 12 to 14 miles to walk to Dothan from Shechem. That's a long walk. And you'd be tired. And Dothan means the place of two wells. So for all their lives, these boys, these young men, had taken the father's sheep to one place. On a certain day, there was no water in Shechem, and they went to a place of two wells. Well, when they got their brother and put him in the pit, it was a dry well. So it means that out of the two wells, only one was productive, and they were getting water to the sheep. Now, you may be in a situation where you've got a dry well going, and you might have to move over here to go to another place, and you find out, well, it's not double what it was, but at least my family will do okay for a while. God moves us around sometimes. And it's not just because of us. We become the certain people to other people that don't know God. Or if they do know God and they've fallen away from Him, you may be that person that'll point them in the right direction. So there's this certain man of Bethlehem, Judah. Now you know Bethlehem means house of bread. The word Beth in the Hebrew is that house, Lehem of the house of bread. And you know baby Jesus was born here. So this is historical that you could go forward and connect the dots to Jesus or go backwards and connect the dots to Adam and Eve. So we're at a crossroads in history. A certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to dwell in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. So we've got a family of four. I think there are families of four in Castle Rock. I've seen a few. This should identify with all of us. Small family. They're just getting along. And it's two boys, one husband, one wife. Sandy and I look over six children. Mindy, our firstborn, and the sweetheart of my heart. And we have 18 grandchildren, 19, 18? 18 grandchildren, two great-grandchildren, and a third one going to be born in Castle Rock. Not for Mindy. When I was in high school, my girlfriend, who lived next door, became pregnant, and that baby was adopted out, and we never married. But that baby, Sandy and I found a few years back, and she was a 40-year-old baby. She has four daughters. They're very, very beautiful girls. And that made us great-grandparents immediately. And one of the granddaughters is moving to Castle Rock. And she's the one with the two little guys that are Scottish all the way. And she's pregnant with their third. And more than likely, that baby is going to be born here in your town. And they're going to live here with you. If anybody will invite them. No, they're going to live with you. They'll get their own house. But we're grateful that God would bless us to be a part of your life and your family. Certain man, Bethlehem, four kids. The name of the man. Now, I want you to learn these four names. And I need to know when we're through here, Dave. Am I done?
11:45.
Oh, got it right here in big numbers, numerals. Okay. Jonathan and Sarah, I think she has sung here before. They have a little girl named Scarlett. Scarlett was here, and she was one of the singers in this production. And for some reason, she loves animals. And we took her to the San Diego Zoo, world's largest zoo. And it was an off day, like a Tuesday, a Wednesday. And there weren't any crowds around. So it was Sandy and myself, Jonathan and Sarah, and little Scarlett. So I said, I know where the lions are. Would you like to see the lions? She's 4 years old. I want to see the lions. Okay. So we go over, and there's a rail that you can climb up on if you're 4 years old. Or if you're 100 years old, you can lean on it like this. And there's the big lion deal, and then there's a gulf between it so that the lion couldn't jump over or somebody couldn't get to him. You'd get down this pit area. We looked and we looked. There wasn't one lion. I was ticked. I wanted to see a lion too. So we just waited, and she said, oh, I wanted to see a lion. And all of a sudden, a female lion was up on the top between some rocks and blended in. And she saw us down there, down where we were. And she was an elderly one. You heard her ankles go, and her legs pushing herself up, and her neck cracking, and her tail was hanging like that, you know, and she wagged it. It just, she had a lot of miles on her. But still, she was a real lion. A four-year-old doesn't see all that. So she comes walking down very slowly. She walks to the very edge as far as she can go, and she stares right at Scarlett. Just looks at her as if a certain lion was sent to bless our family. Now, Scarlett, at 3 and 4 years old, is singing already because her mother sings. So she's singing. And she's looking at this lion. And this lion, as old as it was, gave a roar from the depths of her belly that you could almost see the ribs vibrating. I mean, it was a powerful roar, more than MGM. This was a roar that you would have said, whoa, that came out of that? But she didn't do it just once, and she didn't just do it twice, nor did she do it three times, or four times, or five times, nonstop, mind you, or six, or seven. She did it 8 times, the whole time looking at little Scarlett with her eyes falling out of her head that this lion is communicating. By this time, a crowd of 15 to 20 are behind us. After the 8th roar in that lion not moving, I'm leaning like this on the fence, total silence, and then, in the jungle, the mighty jungle, Scarlett starts singing to the lion. Okay, so I want you to remember, I tell you that story, so you'll remember this godly man. He was the first man in history to ever have a hit record, and it was named after him. It's right there. Elimelech, the lion sleeps tonight. That's his name. You'll never forget, right? That's the dad. The dad is the head of the family. That's what the Bible tells us. So it gives us him first. The first two letters, E-L, is God. When people name their children, they prophetically name them for what they felt they would be when they grew up. This family saw E-L, God. My God is king. Elimelech. My God is king. That's what his name means. Very important. Because we can tell just by his name and how this family moves together that this man loves God, knows God, and has loved his wife and his children to bring them up in the admonition and the nurture of the Lord. His name says it, but you can see it in their actions. The name of his wife was Naomi. Naomi means pleasantness. It can mean pleasantness. So she's probably non-confrontal, not contentious, easy to get along with, you know, friendly, probably a very pleasant lady to look at. So now they have the names of the two sons. Now these have always thrown me a curveball. Their names were Mahlon and Chilion. I see nothing biblical, religious, or Hebrew about Mahlon and Chilion. Do you? Sounds like two lowriders from East L.A., Mahlon and Chilion, Cheech and Chong. It just didn't fit for some reason. And when I began studying this book years ago and looking at it, I looked it up and I said, Malon. Malon, of all things, means sickly. So I don't want to make fun of him. Maybe a little. But he was probably a preemie and weighed 3 pounds or something, but he was sick. So they said, this is sickly. Now his brother, Chilion, means pining or wasting away. Okay, they got two kids that aren't too healthy. We understand that. And one of our sons and daughter-in-laws, they had twin boys. And one of the boys didn't make it, but he did live. And we all held him, we all kissed him, we all prayed for him, we all spoke love in his ears and his heart. And after 6 hours, he went to heaven. But Jax, his brother, is such a blessing to our large family that to have two of him, I couldn't imagine what that would be like. But to have one of them, I realized that God wanted one. Because he's a very special kid. And he's very funny. He's very smart. He's very gregarious. He's just small. He was 3.5, 4 pounds when he was born. He's very small. But he has a heart for God, and that's wonderful. So here's this family of four. What I'm trying to say here is it's just not some Bible people just going through the pages. And it's not just you're somebody in a church. You're special to God. Everything about you is special. God never, ever has made another person like you. Ever. Might have the same build or somebody say, oh, you look like my whatever. There's never been another one of you. And he has the ability to draw out of you the best. And as he does that, you become more special to the people around you. Because we're living in a world where there's a lot of darkness. And when people of light come on a situation, it sheds a little light on the whole situation. We can think differently. And when you learn the word and how powerful it is, if God be for you, who in the world can be against you? You have more confidence than anybody else. You feel secure because God is for you. And you're going to speak your mind and speak truth in love. That's very, very strange in today's society, like the book of Judges. Everyone doing what they want to do. Just let them do it. But you know, when you let anyone do whatever they want to do, you're sending some people to hell. Instead of standing up for righteousness, you've allowed a ballot or something to change what's acceptable. That's exactly right. That's what this is. In the days that there was no king and the judges ruled, the judges make the decisions if it's legal or not. And so the law is moved, which shouldn't be, to make room for political correctness. Now the Bible says in the Old Testament, remove not the ancient landmarks. And in the last few years, there have been a lot of people removing the landmarks of America. You may not see it, but they're stretching boundaries. They're taking crosses down here. They're removing a cross off of a police officer's patch or the car of a door. The Ten Commandments will be out of that library. On and on. The things that are the definition of the country that we love and live in that has given us so much freedom, somebody has come in and began to remove landmarks so that everyone can do whatever you want. And all a person has to do to win office, say yes to everything. Yes, I'll do any. Oh, yes. Yes. Oh, yes. Yes. Well, that's how it was. Except there was this other thing, the famine. So now we see economic disaster. The country has imploded upon itself. Not exploded. The enemies didn't have to come in and tear it apart. They worked from the inside and people lost vision. And where there's no vision, people perish. And this is the book that gave the signers of the Declaration of the Independence and the Constitution of the United States of America vision for this country. Of the people, for the people, and by the people. Totally unheard of. Those were the landmarks. That the Word of God would be the voice, the ethics of this book would make us a great people. But then, like the Israelites, we walk away from God and His Word, and we turn towards pornography and to filth and perversion, and we call that normal. Well, then, God no longer is protecting. So famine came, and this famine has been the vehicle to move them out. There's many vehicles that could move you out of your house or your home or the relationship. But when you connect the dots and say, well, when did this start happening? Whoa, yeah, I forgot that. And then, oh, by kicking it, oh, and here I am today, I can understand that part of it. So watch as God connects the dots for this family of four. Now they took wives of the women of Moab. That was a no-no. The Jewish people were never to intermingle, but they did so. The name of the one was Oprah, and she had a television show. And the name, it's Orpah. Orpah, her name means gazelle. I see her as petite. She jogs, she runs, she's athletic, she's pretty. She's a gazelle. And the name of the other was Ruth. Now, Ruth means friendliness or friendship. Friendship. Easy to get along with, made friends easily, gregarious, young. They dwelt there for about 10 years, so a decade of their lives were dedicated from these two Moabites to these two Jewish boys. I do have to raise a question. It was either really slow on Friday and Saturday nights in Moab, or Orpah and Ruth were blind to marry sickly and wasting away. It doesn't make sense, does it? But they married him. Then both Mahlon and Chilion also died. And the woman survived her two sons and her husband. So now this lady has lost, in verse 3, her husband. And then in verse 5, her boys. That has to be more than pain. But in a crowd this size, all of us have probably felt this pain before of death. It's finished. It's sudden when it happens. There's no bringing that person back. It's deep. And my relationship with God is that I lived in a godless family, didn't have a father. But because there was a good basketball team I played on in junior high, I was invited to the Baptist church across the street to play on their basketball team. And that's how I heard about Jesus the first time. And then when I was 15 years old, summer, going to my sophomore year, junior year, a lady pulled up in a truck and said, "Hey, is your mom home from work?" And I said, "I think so. I think I was just coming home from football practice." And it was about that time, 5 o'clock, 5:30. And she said, "Get in, I'll drive you the rest of the way." Now, we lived in a neighborhood that we knew she was not from our neighborhood. She was from the outside. And I thought that was kind of strange, but I knew that my oldest brother was in the Air Force with her husband. So I looked at her and I said, "Something's the matter. I want you to tell me." And she said, "I'll tell you when your mother hears." And I grabbed her arm, took the keys out of her truck. And I said, "Tell me right this minute." She said, "Your brother, David, was killed 2 hours ago in an automobile accident, California." And I yelled at her and said, "That's a horrible thing to say. Don't you ever say something like that." I didn't cry. I got angry. Now, when people get a death notification, being a law enforcement for so many years, some people respond, they're just stunned. Moms do pretty much what my mom did. I'd bring a cup of tea or coffee to her, and then I'd sit down with her, and then she'd tell her. We lived in about a 300-square-foot, two-bedroom apartment. To go from the kitchen where the coffee pot was to where my mom was sitting was just nothing but a kitchenette between us, right about there. And I was shaking, and all of a sudden she screamed, and I knew she knew. But I want to say something about this scream. It's a scream that comes from inside that I've only heard in 42 years of service come out of mothers. And there's just something about a mother and their child that is a little bit different than a father and the child. Fathers I have seen hit the fist, put a hand through a drywall, kick a cabinet, go outside and swear, yell at God. We all react differently. So this lady has a huge, huge dagger in her heart. She's lost the man she loves. She's lost her only children, not just one of them. She's lost all of her children, all in one day. She's realizing that. She's got these two beautiful girls that are there with her. She rises with her daughters in verse 6 that she might return from the country of Moab. For she had heard in the country of Moab that the Lord had visited his people by giving them bread. You may want to underline that. Isn't it interesting how powerful and how quickly the word can go from one country to another? Wow, I mean, just with the internet right now, what you can do. Satellite telephones, what you can do. How quickly a rumor spreads through Castle Rock. You know, how hurt some teenager at the high school gets because somebody said something. But when God's word is spoken, it is truth. And it brings hope. And it brings light. And it brings health and happiness and healing. And so for her to say, I have heard that the Lord has visited Israel. I'm going back home. And he has brought people his bread. Now, to have bread, you have to have grain. To have grain, you have to have seed. To have seed, you have to have a farm. To have a farm, you have to own the land. To own the land, you have to have equipment to work on that land. The statement that the Lord has given them bread is much bigger. The economy has turned around. People have been down for over 10 years in a huge recession. Deep, if not a depression. Now, she's going to go back. I can go back. There's food. Therefore, she went out from the place where she was, and her two daughters-in-law with her. They went on the way to return to the land, and Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, go, return, each to her mother's house. Now listen to the graciousness of Naomi. Go back to your moms. The Lord deal kindly with you. She's putting a blessing on them, which is a wonderful thing for a mother-in-law. And the Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. And the Lord grant that you may find rest, each in the house of her husband. That released them to remarry. She blessed them. But look what happened when this blessing came. So she kissed them. They lifted up their voices and they wept. And they said to her, surely we will turn with you to your people. Naomi said, turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Are there still sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? Turn back, my daughters. Go forth, for I am too old to have a husband. If I should say, I'll get married tonight, and I should have a husband and get pregnant tonight, basically she's saying, and I would bear twin boys, would you wait for them till they were grown? Will you stay with me for another 16, 18 years? That time you're going to be in your late 30s, early 40s. Would you want to do that? So she's thinking on their behalf. Would you wait for them? Would you restrain yourselves from having husbands? No, no, my daughters. Now, I want you to underline this, if you would, please. That the my daughters, for it grieves, underline this, it grieves me very much. Have you ever had anything in your life that really grieves you? Well, you might this afternoon around 4 o'clock. I'm just saying, San Diego could play well. You know, grief. Good grief, Charlie Brown. Grief is in our vocabulary. Grief is in our community. We have grief. And she brings this up. Now, I want you to underline this because sometimes you may not say things this way or people you know, but it's said something like this. It grieves me very much. All of a sudden, the girls listen. What grieves you? For your sakes. You're grieving for my sake? Why are you grieving for my sake? That the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. Underline that. A lot of people like to blame God. That night, my mom said that my other brother and I could go out with some high school friends. And I remember walking outside. It was warm, 80-some degrees probably. And I just stood there outside that little apartment building. And I shook my fist and I said, if there's a God up there, I hate your guts. It took him a lot to get me here with you this morning. I hate your guts. I used his name in vain. I swore about him. I tried to live a life without him. Became a drunk at 15 till I was 20-something. Just my life went nuts. All because of not understanding that God was working. We like it when God gives us a raise or a bonus, a bigger house or a nicer car, or gives us a vacation. But when God allows a nation to go against him and then those people affect you, it's easier to get grumbling and maybe walk away from God. So this is important. the attitude of our hearts. God has, the Lord's hand has gone out against me. Mark that. Because that is not true. I call that strike one. So they lifted up their voices. They wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth cleaved or clung to her. So one sister went back to the world, and one sister says, I'm sticking with you and your God. And she said, look, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. But Ruth said, now these are where we pretty much get our Western wedding vows. Entreat me not to leave you or to turn back from following after you. For wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me and more also, if anything but death parts you and me, until death do us part. That was a strong, binding vow that was made. All of us that are married have made a strong, binding vow. And not only did the minister who represents the Lord and signs for the worldly certificate, is he watching. But the moment the groom stood to my left and his best man and those other guys over here, and then the maid of honor, all the maidens over there, grandma and grandpa, you're not really grandma and grandpa, but you're much younger than that. They're sitting over here from, who's on the right side? The bride's family. There's grandma and grandpa, mom and dad, grandma and grandpa, grandma and grandpa, and then brothers, sisters, and then cousins, and then all the boyfriends that she used to have going over there. When she walks down the aisle, that's so that she can give the back to all the guys, you know, hey, you had your chance. And then here's the mother and the father of the groom, grandma and grandpa, both families, brother, sisters, cousin, and then all of his buddies. They're all back there. So I'm standing here representing the Lord God Almighty, counseled, feel this should go through, and Lord's going to bless. What I try to remind people is that when you stand there and I say, Ferdinand, I, Wilbur, love you, and I promise, made those names up, I don't know Ferdinand, and I promise to love you, care for you, cherish you all my life, you're saying that to your entire family. They're your witnesses. You're saying in front of your mom and dad and grandparents and uncles and aunts and cousins and old boyfriends, you're saying until death do us part. Get it? It's a pretty serious thing when a man and a wife say, we will be one together. Now, Billy Graham is one of the most transparent human beings that you can ever meet. Ruth Graham was not only transparent, but she was a kick. And for some reason, she took a liking to me. And I've been friends with their family for many years. And Billy will say, when he talks about marriage, that never in their, now he'd say 70 years or 60 years of marriage, whatever, never in 40 years of marriage has the word divorce ever come up in conversation between Ruth and I. Now, murder has come up a couple times from Ruth. The point being that God can work out any difficulties. He can connect the dots and get you both right with Him. It's amazing. But if our attitude is wrong. So, verse 18. When she saw that she was determined to go with her, she stopped speaking to her. Now, the two of them went until they came to Bethlehem. And it happened, when they had come to Bethlehem, that all the city was excited because of them. And the women said, the women of the city. Now, imagine this is you. You've been gone over 10 years. Your heart was crushed when your husband died. Then your two sons die. You have no more family left. And you're coming back with no food, no money, no, you know, retirement. And here's all the women of the town, all of them, come out and line up the streets. Now imagine that, if that happened for you. I think that both of my friends would not show up, but maybe, you know, you would have more friends. Here's the point. All the city comes, and they're all excited, and they say, is this Naomi? Is this Naomi? But she said to them, do not call me Naomi, call me Mara. Remember, Naomi means pleasantness. Now, Mara means bitterness. How had bitterness got into her heart and caused so much physical ailment to her that her face had changed and looked like an old woman instead of the young, vibrant mother that left? How could 10 years be so harsh on someone? But she hung on to the bitterness. The book of Hebrews says, let there be no root of bitterness spring up from within you, because it'll defile many people around you. One person bitter today could go to Super King or whatever it's called and tell the checkout, I'm bitter, that was horrible. The checkout will say, oh, I talked to somebody that just came from the church service, so they said it's horrible. Oh, I was thinking of going to that church sometime. I won't go to that one then. Okay, getting your gas. Hey, did you hear how horrible it is? There's people just all bitter over there. They're all, nobody's happy. They're all, yeah. And that's just what the devil likes. Got a match? Yeah, light it. Fan the flames, fan the flames. No, she looks at her. Is this, don't call me pleasantness, call me bitterness. I went out full, and the Lord has brought me home empty again. Why do you call me Naomi, since the Lord, here she goes again, has testified against me, and the Almighty, here she goes again, has afflicted me. So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law with her, who returned from the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley service. Oh my goodness, ladies and gentlemen, I've just been waved off that my time's up, but I would like to focus on verse 21 just for a second. Don't let this happen to you. I went out full, and the Lord has brought me home again. Again, empty. God has dealt with me. She didn't go out full. There was a famine. They had no money. There was no job. Couldn't afford to pay the payments. Gave the house up. Moved to a foreign country to get away. She didn't go out full. She went out empty. Imagine if you're Ruth, this beautiful woman standing beside her that has said, I'll give my entire life until the day I die to serve you. She didn't come back empty. She came back full. But many times, the people that are closest to us, we don't really see them for what they are and who they are, that God has given these people to us. Oh, that's just grandpa. Oh, that's my little sister. Oh, that's just dad being dad again. You know, and we forget this is what life is about, people. If any man have any greater love than this, it's to lay his life down for his brethren. A man came blind to Jesus, and Jesus did something so unorthodox. He reached down into the ground. He got some dirt, spits on it, makes two mud balls, sticks them in the guy's eyes and rubs them around a little bit. Here's mud in your eye. And so he says, wash his eyes off. They wash his eyes off. And he says, what do you see? He looks around a little bit and says, I see men walking like trees blown in the wind. He probably had a pretty good description of what life was like in those days, that people are wishy-washy and have political correctness and want to do what they want to do. And Jesus said, okay, wipe him off again. Second time, cleanse his eyes. And he said, I can see perfectly. Now, how could a man be blind and say, God bless you? I don't know how he could be blind and say, God bless you, but I know how he could be blind and say, I see men walking in the street. How could he be blind and say, I see men walking as trees blown in the wind, unless he had his sight at one time in his life, and he knew what a man looked like, he knew how men walk, but he was looking and he saw also the wind was moving through the air and the trees were going back and forth. Unless he had had vision before, and that makes an ailment even worse if you were healthy and not born with it. He got a double chance. But his problem was people. He always saw them as a blur. I've learned many years ago, there is never a crowd. It's always individuals standing beside each other or sitting beside each other. And when you get to the place that people are a blur, and it's only the checkout stand, or it's only that person you want to talk to, and everybody else is just a blur, the traffic is blur, the store is blur, the school is blur, you need some help. You need to call on the Lord and realize that He hasn't sent His hand out against you to hurt you or crush you. He's getting you prepared, because this woman is going to marry the richest guy in Bethlehem. He's in his 50s and she's in her 20s or 30s. She falls in love with him. They find out, according to their religion, that there is a man first in line to take everything that Elimelech owed, called a kinsman redeemer. You had to be in the bloodline of whoever died. You know the story, don't you? They came to trap Jesus, the Sadducees. The Sadducees were Sadducee because they didn't believe in resurrection. And so they said, a man died, and his brother married his wife. And then he died, and his third brother married the wife. Then he died, and the fourth brother. He died, the fifth brother. He died, the sixth brother. Seventh brother finally marries her. The question is, whose wife will she be in heaven? Well, they don't even believe in resurrection. They're trying to trap him. And that shouldn't even be the question, do you think? Shouldn't it be more like, what in the world is this woman feeding these men? They're going just crazy out here. So, Boaz says to beautiful Ruth, I love you with all my heart. I would marry you, but there's another man, a Goel, a kinsman redeemer, but I shall go talk to him. Business was done at the front gate of the city. If you were a judge or the city council, you were there. All business was transacted right there. So this guy was so smart. He knew what time he went to Starbucks every morning. Boaz sits down. There comes Charlie walking by. Hey, Charlie, I need to talk to you a minute. Two witnesses for anything. Deal, sign, delivered. Boaz bought 10 witnesses. He didn't want to lose this woman. So Charlie walks, what's up, Boaz? I remember Elimelech, yeah, he's some distant cousin. I don't know. He said, you're in line. Yours Goel. Yours kinsman redeemer. You get all of his land, all of his. Okay, get the documents drawn up. I'll take it. And he was so wise, he held the ace up his sleeve. Charlie looks at him, what's that? Well, you know, his wife came back from Moab with this beautiful 26-year-old woman. Married to one of the boys. You get her as your wife also. I do. 26 years old. He thinks. So I get a tent over here with this 26-year-old. And my wife over here, with all those problems. I can't do this. My wife wouldn't let me have another wife. And you know, I'd have to give her retirement fund and inheritance to these children. No, you take her. He settled it right there. He tricked him. When they made their deal, they reached down their foot. They literally did this, and they took their shoe off. And when they handed it to the other person, the deal was sealed before the witnesses. So they take the shoe off, and he hands his, he takes his. And this is where that saying, this deal really stinks, came from. Right there. So we need to stand. We need to connect these dots. Shall we stand and pray? Boaz marries this beautiful young woman, and they have a baby, and the baby's name is Obed. Obed grows up and gets married, and he and his wife have a baby, and their baby is named Jesse. Jesse grows up and marries, and they have a baby, and he happens to be King David. And it was through the loins and the throne of David that the Messiah would reign forever. God had to allow a famine to come into the land to drive this family out, to allow these people to marry outside of their tribe, to come back home so that Boaz, who was a faithful servant, could marry this beautiful young woman and that they could be the great grandparents of King David. God will move the universe for you, ladies and gentlemen. Just start connecting the dots and see that he's not pushing you over a cliff. He's bringing you.